Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is writer, poet, and scholar Judith Sornberger. Sornberger had a 25-year career as a professor at Mansfield University in Pennsylvania. She created the Women's Studies program there and taught creative writing until her recent retirement. She's the author of several poetry collections, including the full-length Open Heart and a chapbook, Walmart Orchid, winner of the Helen K. Chapbook Prize from Evening Street Press. Her most recent book is a memoir, and what we'll be focusing on in this interview, it's called The Accidental Pilgrim, Finding God and His Mother in Tuscany. It was published in September 2015 by Shanti Arts Press. And welcome to the show, Judith.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Now, The Accidental Pilgrim is about your journey back to religion. So let's begin with your childhood. What was church and religion like for you as a kid?
Well, I grew up in the reorganized Latter-day Saint Church, which was similar to the Mormon Church. Like many churches of the day, it was all male clergy. In this case, it was a lay clergy. So almost every man in the church was an ordained priest or elder or something. Mm-hmm. So they'd all go marching up on a Sunday morning and occupy the podium area, the altar. And we women would sit there out in the out in the congregation.
Looking up in awe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, except most of us, you know, we're probably doing a little discreet eye-rolling as well. Because, you know, there were a number of women that were probably well-suited to being up there than some of the men.
Yeah, well, so you were part of this religion until you were in your 20s, right? And then you finally quit.
Right.
And feminism became your religion.
Yes.
After that. So tell us about leaving the church, and then we'll talk about how
right.
you started feeling
right.
the lure to go back into something.
Right. In some ways, it was hard to go because my twin sons, who were not expected to live when they were born, when I was 22, there was kind of a miracle that took place that made me feel a certain allegiance to the church, even as my heart was really pulling me away from it.
Yeah,
I was really disgusted by the church's non-involvement of women mm-hmm. to the extent of their abilities and desires.
Yeah,
and I was also disgusted with their lack of social justice tolerance or activity.
No, I can understand that. You know, that has evolved in some ways with many churches
in many
now.
Ways.
So tell us, I'm interested in that pull toward religion that you started feeling in your 40s, I believe. And some of it was a craving for the image of Mary and the
More
life
like
of Mary.
In my early 50s, yeah. I guess what happened, I came about it in a roundabout way via the goddess mm-hmm. and feminist spirituality, women's spirituality. I didn't really intend to go back to the church, but I was teaching a women's spirituality class with a woman who was our Protestant campus minister, and she was really cool, funny and open-minded and open-hearted, and we had every stripe of religion and non in that class, from a Wiccan to a Mennonite, and she was great with all of them. And I hope I'm not offending too many people out there right now. But I began to think, well, maybe all Christians aren't idiots. And
you know? No, a lot of people are turned off by especially the radical Christian portrayed through the media.
Absolutely.
That's all you hear about.
And unfortunately, there are quite a few who are willing to be portrayed that way.
Yeah.
And, But she was really a difference for me. And actually, in some ways, she and I started on opposite poles and moved kind of toward each other and past each other. And I became much more interested in Christian theology and so forth that I didn't have that great of an exposure to as a kid growing up, because we also had the Book of Mormon and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So I became fascinated by that, and she became more and more interested in the more out there forms of spirituality that we were also looking at in the class. And so we influenced each other quite a bit. So I found myself just kind of maybe dipping a little toe back into church, in the one that she had been an interim minister at for a while, an American Baptist church, which is very, very different from Southern or independent Bible Baptist churches. Then I found myself really feeling called to look at and experience and delve into paintings of the Virgin Mary.
Yeah, I found that fascinating, the way you talk about that in the book.
Well, and it was especially interesting to me because the one moment in Mary's life that I felt the most drawn to was the Annunciation,
mm-hmm.
that moment of choice when Gabriel comes in and says, "Oh, lucky girl. You've been chosen." And she kind of says, "Wait a minute, how can this be?" And then
very human response.
Very human response. And then she makes a choice. And I think often feminists, me too, some time ago, saw Mary as kind of a yes girl.
Yeah, and just as like a vehicle for other people's needs. And
yeah, a vessel.
Uh-huh.
And yet, the more I look at her, especially in that moment and some other moments later on, the more I realize, no, she made a real decision. And that was, I don't know, fascinating to me.
Yeah, yeah. And so a few months after you start getting back into exploring the idea of going back to church and getting back into religion, you decided to go to Italy.
Right.
And start looking at churches and spiritual monuments and obviously religious paintings. Tell us about that. It made me really interested because I've never been interested in religious paintings, I must say.
Well, I don't think I had either.
Yeah.
But I just started being drawn to them. I had seen some at the National Art Gallery that interested me in a way. I know that a lot of people aren't interested in Renaissance art in particular,
mm-hmm.
but when I found myself feeling interested, I thought, well, if I want to see paintings of Mary, I better go to Maryland, you know?
Yeah.
I better go to Florence.
Florence specifically. Yeah.
And then Tuscany. Actually, all of Italy would have been if I had the time and money. But when I got there, I was just blown away by how much, even though there are people walking around, you know, with their texting and on their motorbikes and everything, and dressed in their modern clothing, the Renaissance was still everywhere. Over doorways, there was the Annunciation. A mural on the wall outside an outdoor bathroom, there was the Annunciation.
Uh-huh.
It permeated the entire place.
It's all over Italy.
Oh,
I went to Rome many, many years ago, and I couldn't believe all the religious. And when we went to the Vatican, of course.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
But I couldn't believe the religious stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this opened up something in you. What was it? It almost felt like a closed heart suddenly opened up.
Yes.
But it wasn't just visuals and feelings. You really found something, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't really interested in a conversion experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I saw myself very much as a tourist in the Christian church. But the more I looked deeply into those paintings and the more I experienced them,
mm-hmm.
I felt like I was having an internal dialogue with the paintings, with the colors, with the light, with Mary's face, with the angel, with the charged air between them. And then, you know, the churches we visited, the feeling that I got there was suddenly like a part of me was willing to experience another way of seeing things.
Uh-huh. That you had backed away from because you probably hadn't even noted it.
Right.
Well, when you were a younger right. person in the church.
And yet, all along, as this was going on, the more drawn in I felt, the more resistant I also felt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what were you being drawn into, though? I mean, can you explain it to people?
Mm-hmm.
I know it sort of stems from the Annunciation
right.
paintings and the life of Mary. And to tell us what it was that was drawing you in. Was it a feeling of safety, a feeling of home?
Not of safety. There might have been some of home, especially when I was back before I went. And I went a few times to the church, several times to the church, and singing the old hymns made me feel a sense of home. But that wasn't it. It was a sense of being called.
Hmm.
It was a sense of, I was Mary in that moment.
Wow.
And I was being called, and I didn't even know to what, but to some kind of re-engagement with that version of God.
Wow. I know you talk about it in the book. You said each time I approached one of the Annunciation paintings, my spirit hushed,
yeah.
which I thought was a beautiful line. But but tell us what that means. That means that you were able to quiet down and, yes. and listen for a time,
yes.
right?
Yeah. I'm thinking of one time in particular when I was standing in line waiting to use a bathroom, these horrible, you know, hole in the floor kind of thing.
Yes, I remember those.
And right there was this beautiful Annunciation mural. And for a moment, I forgot my body. I forgot that I really needed to go to the bathroom. I forgot that I was really hungry and looking for some place to eat. Mm-hmm. For a moment, I felt lifted out of time. And I wasn't even thinking of that painting as existing in time. It was more like I was being lifted into mythological time, time beyond time, and that even though there were all kinds of people around me going all directions, I just felt like I was in this bubble.
And you almost, you feel like you lost your body, right?
Yes.
And you
yeah.
turn into a maybe pure spirit or
yeah.
pure listening.
Yeah.
Or,
for just a tiny moment.
God, that's have you been able to sustain that, though? Or is it just something that lifted you and you're on your way and it's always there?
I sometimes have those feelings when I'm in church, but I'm just as easily have them when I'm out in the woods hiking or when I'm writing a poem.
Yeah,
I'm sure you know that feeling of being lifted out of the moment and into something deeper and more connected to everything else.
Yeah, it is. So how is this religious experience different than what spirituality is, the way we think about it? Feminists exploring the goddess and, you know, coming together in circles. And, you know, how is organized religion for you now different than what you were finding in this other place?
Well, I have to tell you that I'm actually not completely out of the other.
I wouldn't think so. No.
I belong to an Episcopalian church and a very liberal one. Since the marriage ban has been lifted, my priest has married two couples in our church. And this is in Mansfield, Pennsylvania, a very small, you know, rural town. And I call myself an Episcopagan, which is not, I borrowed that term from Jean Shinoda Bolen, who has written Goddesses in Every Woman and some of those books. And because I think the thing that I was really going for was really hoping to find, once I realized I was on a pilgrimage, was some way to reconnect God the Mother and God the Father. Because I think that that's what my biggest gripe with Christianity has been, the lack of the Mother. And yet, even though I have problems with the Catholic Church in some ways, especially, you know, around some women's issues.
Women can't be priests, for one. And,
right. You know. That was the one place where God the Mother, even though they don't call her that, and of course she's the Mother of God.
Right.
You know, that's pretty high up there. even though women couldn't be priests, yet God the Mother, she was there, the Divine Mother. I don't care if she's actually supposed to be a part of the Trinity. In my mind, she is.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Judith Sornberger, and we're talking about her book, The Accidental Pilgrim, Finding God and His Mother in Tuscany. It's a very fascinating, beautifully written memoir.
Thanks.
All along in this book, you talk about your fear of coming out as a religious person. You would lose your cred as a scholar, as a feminist. Talk to us how you've navigated that.
Well, it's been interesting. Because when I was still teaching at the university, it's true that some of my colleagues were really freaked out by this.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine, yeah.
And, you know, here I've been this good little secular humanist for a long time, and suddenly, ooh, what, she's gone over to the dark side.
What's all those stereotypes,
it's
right?
The stereotypes.
That you're going to become intolerant.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the extremes, yeah.
Exactly. And my, you know, actually, it was very difficult for my husband to accept
yeah,
this.
You say that he said, "What happened to my wonderful pagan girl?"
The first morning he saw me putting on pantyhose to go to church, you know, to go getting in drag to go to church. And so, you know, there were real stresses about this. But one of the things that was really interesting was with my students. My students would say, oh, I can't read this book. I'm thinking about Audre Lorde's Zombie, A New Spelling of My Name.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't read this book. Oh, really? Why? Well, because I'm a Christian. Oh, You know, I'm a Christian, and I don't not only read it, but I assign it. And, well, what do you think I should do? Because I'm really having a hard time with this. So I said, well, why don't you go back and read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. See the places where Jesus talks about homosexuality. Are there any? Who is that Jesus? Is that Jesus a judgmental guy? Or is Jesus the one who's hanging out with the people who are on the margins? And, you know, see what that Jesus would say about reading this book.
God, it seems so weird to me. See, that's the stereotype of extreme religion, right?
Right.
You want to slink away from reality.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
You know? I mean, yeah. That's just, they didn't want to read it because of the content of the book and because of Audre Lorde, right?
Right, right.
Because she was a lesbian, right?
And because it was about her, you know, as a girl and a young woman, you know, coming into her full sexuality as a lesbian.
Yeah, I remember the book years ago.
Oh,
I read
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. God, that's so amazing. So how did you navigate? I mean, did you just have to live your life and do your thing as an out religious person and prove to them? Did you have to? Did it take some time to have to prove to them that no, I'm not going to become?
I think so.
Like a television evangelist, you know?
Yeah. I think it took some time. Although they did. I was kind of known as quite a firebrand at my university. In fact, my students called me the Judenator, and some of the younger faculty called me Hurricane Judith. And so when they could see that I wasn't going to kind of turn into what they might have stereotyped as some demure church lady, and that I had as foul a mouth as ever, they relaxed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this was a spiritual journey. It didn't mean that you were going to go live like a nun or
no.
Passing judgments.
No.
I can understand why people are afraid of that, though.
Yeah.
So you're a living example of that you can be both.
Yes.
And do you feel like a messenger? I mean, you even talk about how most churches, women play secondary roles. And as a feminist, you've been taught to be totally assertive, and so are you still reconciling that and trying to
reconcile the
the passive role that women are supposed to play in the church with who you really are?
Well, I don't think I'd be able to be in a church where women were supposed to do. I have to tell you one little story. The American Baptist Church I was going to, in many ways, was a very lovely church, and I was very involved, and I was chair of the the diaconate and things like that. But I scared, people there. And one night at a deacon's meeting, I was talking about how I thought it was important that we start using more inclusive language for God, and especially where pronouns were concerned, like, she, he, etc. And this one guy said, oh, are we going to give God a sex change operation?
And I said, you mentioned this in the book.
Did I?
Yes.
And he said, I said, look, you guys are always saying that God doesn't have a gender. So why are you so worried? Why do you call God he then? And why are you so worried if sometimes we call God she? And actually one time he called me out, and... like at the coffee hour, and he said, I can't believe you're up there poisoning those young minds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So he was afraid of losing his power.
He was.
That's exactly what that
he
is,
was.
Correct?
Well, and one of the things that was going on is I was trying to move us toward a more a welcoming and affirming stance. And I was setting up some workshops and discussion groups to talk about sexuality issues. And that was just so... threatening to some of the people there.
Yeah, well, I would assume that some people do join religions because of the structure.
Oh, yeah.
And because of the patriarchy even.
Yeah.
Because in the real world, These guys don't get to, be the boss, right?
Yeah.
You know, and be the leader in every facet of their life. Mm-hmm. That's, God, that's fascinating. Now you mentioned in your book that you read somewhere that because our culture doesn't worship a great mother individual, that mortal mothers are called upon to
right.
take on this role
right.
without the power or the perks,
exactly.
you say. So,
exactly.
So let's talk about that. The great mother is a symbol and a you know, something to look up to in many religions.
Right.
So to talk to us about that. Do you really think it's transferred in that way?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, when I've taught on mothers and daughters in literature course. And when I've taught that, I've sometimes used Tilly Olson's story, I Stand Here Ironing,
oh, yeah.
where there are reasons that many of the students found to criticize the mother. She should have done this. She should have been this. She should have. Well, at one point with one class, I said, okay, let's just stop right here and let's put up on the board here everything that we think a mother should be. And so they had zillions of them. We filled up two blackboards.
Wow.
Right? And so then at the end, I said, okay, great. I said, now, how many of you are planning on becoming mothers someday? Well, about, 85% of the class raised their hand. And then I said, and do you all have all of these qualities and characteristics? Well, no. Where are you going to get them? And there was this one, somebody had... Oh, I know, should be able to give her daughter a sense of herself. And I said, now, everything on this board tells me that she's supposed to be selfless. I drew a line between selfless and give her daughter a sense of herself. I said, how can somebody who's selfless give somebody else a sense of themselves? I mean, it was just so amazing to me.
Contradictions.
Yes,
And expectations that are totally unrealistic if you're talking about a human being, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, mothers are not superheroes. They might look like it sometimes because a lot of mothers work really hard to be everything their kids need them to be. Stretch themselves beyond what they consider their own capabilities.
Yeah. Well, some of this does stem from Mary and the depiction of women in the church, right?
I mean, well, yeah. Except, if you look, Mary's not around much. Except she's around more in the Quran, by the way. Yeah, very interesting. But she's not around much in the Gospels. And, one of the places she is around is when she tells Jesus to turn water into wine at that wedding. It's not like she's doing for him. She's saying, son, they ran out of wine over here. what are you going to do about it? And he said, Mom, it's not time for my time has not yet come. And she kind of gives him what I like to think of as the look. And he said, okay, bring some water in. I'll change it into wine. I don't think she was quite as demure as we like to think of her.
Yeah. Do you feel like women like you who are going back into the church and into religion this way are going to reinterpret and be able to spread a different word, so to speak?
I hope so. I mean, and I see a lot of women doing it. My priest is a woman, and she's quite amazing. And I'm always kind of amazed that she came into a church with a small group of people who've been going there most of their lives, and I've been amazed to see that so many of them have hung in there, because she comes up with some things that would be pretty shocking to a lot of very, even introducing, at the end of the service we say namaste and things like that.
I was brought up as a Catholic. I never heard that in the Catholic Church. I must say.
Yeah.
So you've gone back to the church, and are you just taking it into your life? What you're learning and finding there, or do you want to have a big role in the church at some point?
I think at one point I thought I might want to go to seminary.
Hmm.
And I had a few people tell me they thought maybe I had a calling.
Wow.
But the more I've kind of sat with that, the more it seems like, I think my real calling in life has been in teaching and in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now after many years of teaching, I get to spend more time writing. And I do find that, you know, more of my writing tends to be around spiritual issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just kind of finished putting together a manuscript, a poem called The Long Habit of Bowing.
Wow.
That is poems that having to do with prayer, having to do with the kind of push-me-pull-you relationship I've had with the church, even since I've re-entered.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That'll be a lifelong thing.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely.
Yeah. And I, you know, in the time since I wrote the book, I have come and gone, for sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And with years in between being in a church, so...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Tell us, have you gotten reaction to the book, and what were your expectations? What did you want people to take from it?
One thing I wanted was what my husband used to say. Bruce used to say, well, you know, what about all these Christians, you know, being such blank, blank, blank?
Yeah, I know.
And I'd say, well, you know, that's not all Christians. He said, why is it we're not seeing that what you're telling me? Why aren't we seeing those Christians who are broad-minded, who are doing the work of their Christ? Why aren't we seeing that? And so...
You will be an example of that, right? I mean...
Well, I'd like to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really not a very good example.
Well, but, I know a lot of women who are religious. They call themselves Christian, and they are into helping the poor.
Right, yes.
All the things that Jesus said, you know.
Right, yeah.
To help your fellow people and,
right.
you know, and,
yeah.
and take care of the poor and make sure people are fed.
Visit
and warm
people in prison instead of judging them. And,
yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that, you know, if more women like you will come out
right.
as Christians and,
yeah.
and not be afraid
and
of the judgment.
It is like coming out.
And show this other side of it instead
right.
of just the stereotype. Well, you know, we're almost out of time. Talk to me just a tiny bit about how the way you say that writing poetry is like a prayer to
yes.
you.
Well, when I sit down to write in my study, I light a candle beside me, and I stare into the flame for a minute. I get out my... As a poet, you'll understand how the blank page is like a church. It's like a cathedral, a sanctuary,
mm-hmm.
and you have to fill it with what's inside you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like prayer, you know? It's like, you know, the one way of thinking about it is the page is the ear of God.
Yeah. I mean, I do think writing poetry is a spiritual experience,
oh,
and
yeah.
reading it and listening to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it's like painting a stained glass window on a
yes,
blank page.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting. Is there any contact information that you can give people if they want to get in touch with you? Do you have a website?
I do not have a website. I do have, I'm on Facebook. So my last name is spelled SornBerger. And you can order my book, you know, from your local independent bookstore or online. And but no, I'd love to hear from people. I'd love to hear people's responses to the book.
That's great. That's great. Well, we look forward to more poetry, more thought about this new life that you've embarked on. Judith Sornberger, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great pleasure. Again, the book is called The Accidental Pilgrim, Finding God and His Mother in Tuscany, and it was published by Shanti Arts Press. Thank you, Judith.
Thank you. It's been so much fun.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.